Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Matthew Stafford led the Rams back to the postseason. How much pressure is on him now to get his first career playoff win? Josh Allen and the Bills run the AFC East, but is Buffalo a legit Super Bowl contender this time around? And Aaron Rodgers is the MVP favorite, but does Tom Brady still have a shot? Oh. Thanks for waking up with us.
No one thinks
on this
that.
Tuesday morning. Don't no. answer what it yet. Doing? We've got 2 hours. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Chris Broussard, Kevin Wilds. Broussard, you still team Tampa Tom for MVP, or have you jumped ship to Aaron Rodgers?
All I'll say is this, Jenna, two words. Take integrity. Take integrity.
Oh, he's sticking
I'm
with his date.
I'm here
going
for that.
Down with the ship.
Stay where you started.
Going down
You stay
with
where
the
you
ship.
Start. I like that, Broussard. All right, we'll get to all that maritime action. Start with the national title game, Georgia, Alabama, and all the drama you can muster. Battle of SEC powerhouses. And it was Georgia who came out on top this time around. A defensive slugfest in the first half turned into a second half shootout. But that Georgia defense, they've been great all season long. Great last night when it mattered most. And they helped dethrone the Crimson Tide and deliver Georgia their first national title since 1980. All right, Nick, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to the game last night?
My reaction is I am happy for one specific person and one specific group of people. The person I'm happy for is Stetson Bennett. Because if any, and we don't have to rehash his story. The broadcast did a good job explaining it last night. I'm sure there'll be a Disney movie made about it at some point. It's an unbelievable story that looked like it was going to end in heartache when he fumbled the football on a strip sack late in the game, and it looked like he was going to cost Georgia the game. But then he came back, made his best plays and best throws of the night as Georgia ended up winning by a probably not quite as impressive margin as the final score because a pick six went into that at the end. But I'm happy for Stetson Bennett, a kid who, when he was 3 years old, said he wanted to be the quarterback of Georgia, had to walk on, had to leave, had to come back. Fans didn't even really like him, and now he's national champion. The group of people I'm happy for, Broussard, however, is slightly larger than Stetson Bennett and his family. I'm happy for America. Because dynasties are bad in college sports,
larger.
And Alabama losing is good for all of us. Here's the thing. I think dynasties in pro sports work. You either love them or hate them. There are characters that you follow throughout, and you can get attached to them in one way or another. In college sports, when you have a run of dominance the way Alabama football has under Saban, in the last 13 years since he really got the program rolling, 6 national championships, 3 other national championship game losses, an unbelievable record, just total and utter domination. There's no characters to attach ourselves to other than the coach. And Saban, as great of a coach as he is, he goes to the same Bill Belichick school of charisma that, you know, some of his coaching tree has gone to. And so I think that having a diverse group of national champions is good for the sport. And I think the fact that in the last 4 years, we now have 4 different national champions in Clemson, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia is good for the sport. Now, do I think the best thing for the sport would be if that diverse group could include, you know, geographic locations outside of the Southeast of America? Sure. But we'll see if we get there. But I just think Alabama winning every year is not good for college football. So I think it's good that Georgia got over the hump and Georgia won that game.
All right, you said a mouthful there, Nick. Let me start with this, and this is why I'm the elder statesman of the show. Because I actually remember, Jenna, I watched the last time Georgia won the championship. I didn't just hear about it, read about it, while the rest of you either were in diapers or not even born, maybe. I emulated Herschel Walker on the football
field.
Just to let y'all know, another feather in my cap is the elder statesman of the show.
Yeah.
But let me address the game quickly, Nick. You're right, Stetson Bennett, great story. And I actually liked seeing a walk-on outplay the Heisman Trophy winner. Now, I'm not saying Bennett was, you know, throwing the ball all over the field, but he didn't make the mistakes at the end that Bryce Young did make. I also thought the best team won. And that's one of the great things we're getting now with the playoff versus these mythical championships that we've always had in college football. And Georgia, all year long, was the better team. I know they got crushed in the SEC championship by this Alabama team. But if you look at common opponents, things like that, Georgia was better. And their defense was being called one of the best of all time in college football. And I think they showed that last night. So I think that was something good that came out of last night. But I agree with you, Nick. Nick Saban's dominance of college football hasn't been great for the game. And it's no, I'm not blaming him at all. It's not a criticism. It's actually a credit to him and his greatness. But I look, he's the issue. It's not even just college dynasties, as you pointed out, because we've had, like, the legendary head coach in college football has been great for the sport. It was great to have a Bear Bryant, a Woody Hayes, a Bo Schembechler, a Joe Paterno, even up to an Urban Meyer. Like, these legendary coaches who become institutions to some degree are great for the game. The difference is, as great as they all were, none of them dominated like Nick Saban. Bear Bryant won six championships. Saban's got seven. But his six came in like a 19-year span. All right, Tom Osborne, he won three at Nebraska in 4 years in the 90s. So it's either been long, drawn-out dynasties or real quick where, like, to your point, a Tommy Frazier at Nebraska, Lawrence Phillips, like, these guys were the same guys for 2 or 3 years or 2 or 3 of the championships. Saban has won 6 championships in 12 years at Alabama. Like, it's just too much. And again, credit to him, but it's not good for the sport when he has created an atmosphere, Wilds, a feeling that I've not really seen before him in college football where it's you can't beat him. It's Nick Saban, it's Alabama, and everybody else. And that's the first time I've ever seen that's it, awesome. And that's not good for the game.
Oh, you know what I miss the days of? BYU winning the championship. That's what I really want to see. Let's set Ty Detmer back there. All right. Can I just push back on everything that was just said? Dynasties are great. I know nobody wants to admit that dynasties are great. They're great. And if you look at college football is doing awesome. The money is up. The ratings are up. The attendance are up. All while the SEC is dominating, has won 11 of the last 15 championships. You know what sport is not doing totally awesome? College basketball. College basketball, you know why? Yeah, because Duke's been okay. Because Kentucky's been okay. Oh, but what about Gonzaga? Oh, but there we go. Little school that popped up. And guess what? You guys don't love it. You don't love it. And I understand the you don't want just the rich get richer and it's just the SEC and all the money and the recruiting is heading towards the SEC. Like next year, Alabama's 5-2, Georgia's 9-2, Ohio State's 7-1 for championships. I get it. Do I think Ohio State's actually going to compete? Kinda. And do they, if they end up facing one of the SEC schools, do I think they're going to get rolled? Yeah. So I like dynasties. Maybe it's the Patriots, Bill Belichick ending, but I think dynasties are actually good. And the complaints that dynasties aren't good is just, it doesn't have any analytical backing if money, attendance, and ratings are up.
Okay, but so a few things here. One is I don't mind the SEC dominating. I do think it'd be better if some West Coast teams and some Big Ten teams other than Ohio State could win a title. But I don't mind that it's all coming from the same geographic area. And it does help that Clemson had their moment. Florida State had their moment where those aren't SEC teams. Yep. So, and Clemson had more than one moment. But, and I agree. I think dynasties are good when you can attach them to players. I think, hell, you could argue, you know, Duke's had a long dynasty under Coach K, if you want to call it that. But the most memorable segment of that was when you could attach it to Christian Laettner. It wasn't just about Mike Krzyzewski. And so in college football, just because of the nature of the sport, with the rotating door of players, you can't attach it to anyone. And the last point I'll make is this, which is I think that, you know, to misquote Shawshank Redemption, hope is a good thing. If Alabama would have won this year, I think a lot of college football fans across America would be like, when are they not going to win? Because this was not a great Alabama team. They lost to A&M. No. They weren't overwhelmingly impressive in the regular season. They should have lost to Auburn and not even been in this position. If that kid doesn't go out of bounds on Auburn's last possession, then they lose in, what, quadruple overtime. And so, like, the Alabama, if this Alabama team beat this Georgia team twice, then I think folks would go into a season and be like, we're all playing for second place. And I don't think that's good. So I'm glad Georgia won. Georgia was the better team. They had the better season. And now it's like, hey, four champions in 4 years. It feels a little parody-ish, even if it's all the big blue blood brands that are, you know, standing at the end of the season.
All right. Well, it's a good conversation. I do see your point, Wilds, but congratulations to Georgia. Go Dogs.
Thanks, Jenna.
And we'll see how they spill that into next year. Yeah, of course.
I won that.
We're going to hit the pros. We got to talk about this guy. You won.
I don't know about that.
You won. We got a couple more. See how this all plays out at the end. How much pressure is on Matt Stafford, guys? I mean, he'd like to win his first playoff game, but I don't know. It's been kind of a rough stretch for him. We'll ask these guys next. First things first.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Talk some NFL playoffs. Start with Cardinals-Rams. The NFC West foes getting set for a wild card matchup. That's Monday in L.A. Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury got a lot to prove after his team hit a bit of a wall down the stretch. For Rams quarterback Matt Stafford, he's 33, he's in his 13th year in the NFL, and he's still looking for playoff win number one. All right, that's everything you need to know. Broussard, who's got more on the line here, Kingsbury or Stafford?
This sounds like a trick question to me, because it's obviously Matthew Stafford. And I get the Cliff Kingsbury, you know, position. Okay? His teams historically, and Nick's pointed it out well, dating back to college, they've fallen apart late in the season, and obviously Arizona has done that this year. But let's look at the big picture. Cliff Kingsbury has improved that Arizona team every year. 5 wins the first year, 8 wins last year. Now they're 11-6 and in the playoffs. If they get beat in the first round, there'll be disappointment. But you know what? The story will be, hey, guys, look, we made the playoffs. This was the first step. It is a process. All right, next year our goal is to win it all. We got our experience. We took our lumps. We're coming back next year with some experience and ready to win it all. So Cliff Kingsbury, not on a hot seat if they go out in the first round. I can't imagine he would be. Ooh. This team hadn't made the playoffs in 6 years. Now, let's get to Matthew Stafford, on the other hand. I mean, the Rams mortgaged their future for this guy. They had a quarterback who was good. Not great, but good. They got to a Super Bowl with him. They got to the playoffs, what, 3 times in 4 years with him, with Jared Goff. And then they gave up 2 first-round picks and a third-round pick for him. All right? And you didn't do that to get beat in the first round at home by a wild-card team. All right, so if that happens, then Matthew Stafford is really going to have to wear this. And his stature, which I think, Nick, has already diminished over the second half of the season, will fall even further. All right, because as the games have gotten more important, as the stakes have gotten higher, all right, Stafford's performance has gotten worse. All right, he's thrown 8 interceptions, Nick, in the last 4 games. All right, as the playoffs near, and as the division crown was on the line, and as people are talking, yes, he leads with Trevor Lawrence. All right, he was playing much better early in the season. So this is on Stafford. Everybody wants to put all his playoff failures on Detroit, but he had Jim Caldwell in Detroit, who went to a Super Bowl as a coach.
Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, Calvin Johnson,
I'm with
Hall
you
of
on
Famer.
Stafford.
And Ndamukong Suh. All right.
Yeah. I'm with you on Stafford, but here's why I think it's Kingsbury. Stafford is the quarterback of the Rams next year, 100% no matter what. And there will be some justifications, even if they fall on my deaf ears, of, hey, first year in a new system for quarterbacks, it's usually year two where they take off. Most of those Rams pieces, aside from maybe Odell, but maybe Odell will be back next year. You also get Robert Woods back. There's a lot of rationale that can go into it. The Cardinals, on the other hand, you're right about where the expectations may have been early. But much like what Wilds did with his baby goat, the expectations adjusted as the year went on. The expectations change when you start out as hot as they do, and at the end of the year, they collapse. We can show the graphic, but it's worse than the actual graphic. It's worse than just another end-of-season collapse. They lost four of their final five with three losses to non-playoff teams, Detroit, Seattle, and Indy. If they win any of those games, they're the three seed and playing the Niners in Arizona, and they're 2-0 against the Niners this year. So, I'm not saying he's going to get fired if they lose, but Wilds, I don't think it's a ludicrous conversation when you have a decade-long track record of a guy collapsing at the end of the season. They also had a blowout loss to Carolina mixed in there, all of which, to me, puts the pressure squarely on Kingsbury.
So if you're saying that he might go onto the hot seat, Nick, I think Kevin Clark had an interesting tweet about Brian Flores. He said, if you're going to fire your coach and he immediately becomes the number one option for a bunch of other teams, maybe you shouldn't have fired him. So obviously the Dolphins should not have fired Brian Flores. We'll take him back in New England in a heartbeat, FYI. Thank you, Dolphins. But Nick, don't you think if Kingsbury hit the market, all of a sudden Chicago would be like, woo, Cliff Kingsbury and Justin Fields? Well, that would be nice. Or even Miami would be like, oh, Cliff Kingsbury and Tua? That might be nice. Don't you think the fact that the market would be so hot for Cliff Kingsbury is a reason why Arizona would hold on to him?
Well, I don't know that I agree with you the market would be that hot. I mean, the guy at Patrick Mahomes couldn't win. He now has Kyler Murray. They're collapsing. Little buried take. Brian Flores should go to Jacksonville. Finally get a good quarterback. They're historically patient with coaches. Brian Flores go to Jacksonville. But let's stay on Kingsbury. I don't know. I wouldn't want Cliff Kingsbury to be my head coach. Now, if they go on a playoff run and he can try to get some of this monkey off his back, then so be it. But Broussard, you and I were similar in the pump the brakes on the preseason Stafford MVP Rams Super Bowl hype. You and I agree a lot about that he has been overrated by some as far as putting none of the blame of what happened in Detroit on him. But part of what has happened to the Rams this year also, to be fair, is the defense is not as good as it was last year. Now, some would argue that's because they lost their brilliant defensive coordinator, who you and Wilds passionately hate, Brandon Staley. But that loss has clearly been felt. And so I just don't think, and I don't think anyone believes, should have kept Goff. Goff's awful. His team won three games this year. I don't think anyone's like, oh, we regret that trade. So even if some of the Stafford hype was overwrought, I don't think anyone's coming back and being like, oh, we should have stood pat with tiny hands.
Well, look, I agree that Stafford, for all his warts, is an upgrade over Goff. All right, but you didn't just give up Goff. You gave up two first-round picks that are coming up, all right? That's the thing.
Sure.
And that's what they might regret, because you were doing well with Goff. And again, I'm not saying he was some awesome quarterback, but they were a playoff team with Jared Goff and a Super Bowl team at one point, all right? The feeling in L.A., Nick, and you know this, was that Goff everything had to be perfect. Todd Gurley had to be 100% healthy and running the ball well. The defense had to be among the best in the league. We had to have a great receiving court. Like, everything had to be going perfect for Goff to succeed. It looks a little bit like that with Stafford. Again, a little better, but you didn't go from Jared Goff to the Brady, Mahomes, Rodgers class. You went from Jared Goff up a little bit. And if they get beat in the first round, Nick, and you mortgaged your future to get beat by a wild card team at home in your brand new digs, oh, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. Kingsbury, on the other hand, he'll be back next. Would you fire Kingsbury if they lose?
I wouldn't have hired him. I wouldn't have hired him. So I don't know. I'm biased.
But you
on that.
Wouldn't fire him.
Okay. Nah, I don't know. I'd submit him as Sarah DeBrusque.
I won. No one's Wild's even won the factoring first one. I just in that won great this. House he has in Arizona.
What tied
right,
up?
That's right, Jenna. I told him put it on Zillow.
Thank you.
I told him start shadow listening.
I don't know why rounded. I didn't listen to you. I think. Okay. Words. Let's talk some MVP. Does Tom Brady actually deserve the award over the heavily favored Aaron Rodgers? Oh, this will be another fun conversation. We're back after this. Let's have it. Let's have that MVP debate. Fox Bet Sportsbook has reigning MVP. Aaron Rodgers is a big favorite over Tom Brady. This would be Rodgers' second straight MVP. It would be his fourth overall. You can see why he's the big favorite. Packers finishing 13-4, getting the one seed. Rodgers having another mistake-free 37-touchdown, four-pick season. Broussard, though, you've been team Brady for MVP all season. You also subscribe to a little thing called Take Integrity. But at this point, yes. Should Rodgers be a lock over Tom?
Absolutely not. Not only should he not be a lock, but Jenna, as I said in the preseason, and I'm going to say it again, Tom Brady is the MVP. It's simple. It really is. Let's look at the numbers.
No.
Brady bested Rodgers in everything. Touchdowns, yards per game, total yards. Look at that. Four touchdown games. He had six of them. Rodgers had three. 350-yard games. Rodgers had one or two. Brady led the league in all of these categories. Brady averaged 55 more yards per game, roughly, than Rodgers did passing. All right, and the win-loss records were the same. Both of them 13-4. So, Nick, you can't just say, oh, empty calories. Oh, Brady also played every game. Rodgers missed one. It's not terrible, but the best ability is availability. And Rodgers happened to miss maybe their biggest game of the year against the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, then we go to the fact that Rodgers had, Nick, the best. Well, here's some more. This is part of Brady's narrative. I didn't want to go there yet, but here we go. Three records he broke this year. Single season completions, career completions, and career passing yards at 44. But that's a narrative. This is part of the narrative. The narrative is that this dude at 44 years old, Nick, did this. This guy lost two of his best three wide receivers, Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin, to injury and foolishness. He also lost his best tight end, Gronk, for five games to injury and still led the league in all those categories. Aaron Rodgers had the better run game. He had the best receiver of the two teams in Devontae Adams. And Brady had to deal with drama, AB and the like. Aaron Rodgers created the drama that he had to deal with. It was all self-inflicted, okay? He lied to the media. He lied to the public about being immunized. He went after his front office. And he didn't have the highs that Brady had. Nick, I pointed out the four touchdown games. Brady had 2 5 touchdown games. Rodgers had zero. Okay? Pro football focus, which, to use your term, Nick, is dripping in objectivity. They had Brady as the best quarterback in the league. They had him first team all pro.
PFF's quarterback evaluation.
Rodgers was fourth.
Throw him in the trash.
They had Rodgers
fourth.
That's great.
I understand.
They're just looking at the numbers. They're just like
Brandon
Staley and you looking at the numbers.
No, stop it. Listen, I've known Sam Monson and that crew for 14 years. Used to have him on my radio show in Kansas City when we were both getting our start. I should have bought equity in the company. They do a great job, a lot of things. Pro Football Focus's quarterback evaluation metrics are garbage. All you need to know, look at the quarterback grade. Go look up the Chiefs-Steelers game. The Chiefs-Steelers game. that the Chiefs were up 36-3 on. And look at how they graded Mahomes versus Big Ben. They don't, they're, I don't know who's doing their quarterback grading.
That's what it
is. So that we can throw out. It's not a Mahomes thing. It's an overall quarterback evaluation thing. Look it up. Just look. Okay. So set out PFF's, you know, proprietary broken algorithm aside. That's first of all. Second of all, you're just making up categories so Brady can lead in.
What?
Who had the most 350-yard games? Oh, that's amazingly Tom Brady. Who had the most 4 touchdown games? Who gives a damn? Now, yards and touchdowns are a real category.
Those are important.
And I give him credit for that. Tom Brady deserves the first annual Drew Brees Award, which is he was the best compiler in football. But on a per-pass basis, can we show? Was he top 5 in anything? No. 9th in completion percentage, 12th in yards per attempt, 6th in touchdown interception ratio, and 7th in passer rating. That passer rating number matters, of course, because Rodgers was obviously 1st in touchdown interception ratio, 1st in passer rating. The gap between Rodgers and Brady's passer rating is the same. It's actually larger than the gap between Brady and McCorkle Jones. So let's not pretend that Tom Brady had a better year than the man who had 37 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. The man who, after week 1, had 37 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. The man who, after week 1, his team lost 1 game that he played the entirety of, and it was an overtime game where he had, let me check, 385 yards, one of those coveted 4 touchdown games Broussard cares so much about, and a 148 passer rating. That's his one loss after week 1. Listen, I have not wilds liked how Rodgers conducting himself this year. I have not liked a lot. Yeah, but he didn't play the full game against Detroit. He played the first half and then sat. I have not liked a lot of the things Rodgers has done. But as someone who is actually dripping in objectivity, not dripping in tying myself to an old take, he's obviously the MVP, Wilds. He has to. We don't have to like it.
Okay.
But he has to be the MVP this year.
Okay. All right. Broussard, I think Nick is right on most of the stuff, other than saying that he like is friends with the PFF guys and then rips their quarterback algorithm to shreds. That's not again.
He used to be
great
friends
friendship.
With him, right?
Especially
take
about
integrity.
Quarterbacks. Like
it crosses friend.
No,
bounds.
You don't need. No, you.
You think when people ask me about you, I don't tell them your flaws, buddy? I do. I'm just always honest.
You know what?
I mean, listen. I love you, but. Kind of a goofball. Go ahead, though. Sorry.
Gotta respect it. Okay, here's the thing, Broussard. I'll meet you in the middle. I think Rodgers is going to end up getting the MVP. And the amount of outrage that we saw from Hub when he said, I think the guy's a big jerk. And I think that gave an indication of how the voters are leaning. But here's the little bonus.
Yeah.
I think Brady wanted the MVP early in the year. I think he was gunning for it. I think he's like, you know what? This will be a nice feather in my cap because I want to sort of prove people wrong that I can still do it. Now, I think Brady doesn't want the MVP. I think Brady wants Rodgers to win it. I think Brady likes the narrative that Rodgers is going to win it. Brady needs a little, he needs to be uncomfortable to play his best. Whether it's Julian Edelman yelling at him that he's too old, whether going to Tampa Bay and wanting to prove Belichick wrong. So now what is that new motivation? Everyone says he's great. Everyone's laying flowers at his feet. So he's like, geez, I need something here. What is it? AB's little podcast thing that says you're treating Brady like a hero? No, I don't think that's going to do it. But the fact that Rodgers is the better quarterback, I think will give Brady the little bit of extra juice that will push him in the playoffs and make him perform better. So even though I think you're wrong, you're actually the larger goal of Brady winning a Super Bowl, this will actually help Brady.
That was a great take until the end, until you said I was wrong. All right, but I like what I like where you went, Wilds. You were far more objective than Nick, and I'm objective too. It looks like...
No, you're not.
It looks like Aaron Rodgers will win the MVP. What I did the past 10 minutes on this show is tell you who should win the MVP. All right? And who should win it is Tom Brady. Simple and plain. Yeah. But Wiles, you're absolutely right. Uh-huh. All this is going to do is motivate the GOAT, Nick. And when Tampa Bay and Green Bay meet in the NFC title game.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I'm going to be watching off my shoulders, baby.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because you're wrong about all your MVP
I love picks. How
Dust
we all stick
off.
To our take integrity. Nick, hand out some medals for us. Could LaMelo Ball get one? He had 23 points, including the go-ahead bucket with 15 seconds left to beat the Bucks, but nah, just missing out, huh? All right, which three guys did it better
just
last night?
Just missed out. Sorry, LaMelo. Oh, Wilds was right. Anthony Simons. Second time in 10 days, third time in his career, makes the medal stand. Those who watch the show every day know I told a very embarrassing personal story about the original Anthony Hardaway the last time he was on the medal stand. My mom asked me not to tell that story again. Silver medal, Jaylen Brown. Listen, the Celtics might stink, and Jaylen Brown might be on his way out of town. But that doesn't mean he can't beat the Pacers in overtime. Why are you going to overtime with the Pacers, Boston? Get it together. Gold medal, Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid just quietly doing his thing on a night-in, night-out basis. Has to listen to the media just absolutely go gaga over screen assist when it comes to Gobert. Go just, oh my God, look at Jokic's bounce passes. You know what? Whatever happened to an old school, defensive minded, kick you in the teeth center? Get him, Joel. Win your gold medal. Nice win over the Rockets. 20-point victory. There's your medal stand from last night in the association.
A little bit of everything.
I like the
old school.
All
right, it's a good stand. We move on.
That.
We're heading to Buffalo. Circle the wagons. Are Josh Allen and the Bills legit Super Bowl contenders this season? Talk about that next. This is First Things First. Hey, Sunday on Fox. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles looking to dethrone the reigning champs. Got a vibe to this. Nice music, nice graphic. They take on the GOAT, Tom Brady and the Bucks. It all kicks off 1 Eastern. Pre-game coverage starting at 11. So get your workout in, get to the couch, and stay there all day only on Fox, all part of Super Wild Card Weekend. Took a long time to read that. Sorry. Let's move on. Back talking the Buffalo Bills now. AFC East winners again this year. All right, so this sets up, bum, 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 a third meeting with the Patriots this season. This one in the wild card round, but for Josh Allen, he says Patriots, Schmatriots. His sights are already set on a bigger goal. Take a listen.
Say that.
Nobody at the end of careers looks back and really figures out how many times you won your division. You know, I think the main goal is the Super Bowl, and winning the division just gives you an opportunity to do that. So that's really our focus. You know, it's great. It's fine. The hats and shirts are cool. But at the end of the day, we got a lot more work to do.
No shirts and hats for Josh Allen. Three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington joining us now. LeVar, good morning. We're going to get to you in a second. But, Nick, I want to start with you. Nick, what is on the line for Josh Allen in this game?
Let's be very clear. Of the six games this weekend, Josh Allen and the Bills have more on the line than any other team, and it's not close.
Oh.
It would be a total debacle if they were to lose this game. They can't lose this game. I'm not saying I'm not saying they absolutely won't. What I'm saying is for their franchise, for what they're trying to build, for what their plan was, to lose not only Wild Card Weekend, but Wild Card Weekend to this team would be a franchise-shaking moment. If they win, then the plan is gone basically just the way they had hoped. They would have rather the divisional round game against Kansas City be in Buffalo, but they already won in Kansas City earlier this year. They built an offseason where they were admitted about being obsessed with beating the Chiefs. They beat them once already. They would get a chance to beat them and then be the favorites to come out of the AFC. That's who they play in round two if they win. If they lose to a rookie quarterback against a team that's playing its worst football of the year, a team, LeVar, who they just crushed, led wire to wire against a few weeks ago, and go two rounds shorter in the playoffs this year than last year, it's a total disaster. So I understand it's the playoffs, so it's must win for everybody. But there are some franchises this weekend that are just happy to be there. There are some franchises that are playing with house money. And there is one franchise that unequivocally, absolutely must win. And that's Buffalo.
This is as great a year and as great a time for a team like Buffalo to take full advantage of the bracket and get to the Super Bowl. Again, I continue to say the team to beat is clearly the Kansas City Chiefs, but they're as vulnerable as they've been since starting this dominant run with Patrick Mahomes. So you look at this Buffalo Bills team, Josh Allen has been considered to be the franchise guy that can get this team to the next level, right? What is the pressure that's on Josh Allen? Is that he's delivering the goods that you haven't seen since the likes of, well, Jim Kelly. We all know how that ended, right? So when Josh Allen says, I have bigger goals than just getting a divisional championship, well, that's correct. But once you make it, and once you get past the first round, and once you get to a point of where you're playing well enough to make it into the Super Bowl, you have a whole different amount of pressure that's going to be on top of you when you get to that place. Because Buffalo fans expect to get to the Super Bowl. Bottom line is Buffalo fans haven't won a Super Bowl, right? So Josh Allen has a lot of pressure on him to perform, not to mention a lot of other quarterbacks get pressure put on them for making it to the playoffs. And what are they going to do? Most notably, Lamar Jackson as of late, right? We judge Lamar Jackson's greatness off of how far has he gone in the playoffs. We look at Baker Mayfield. How far are you going to go in the playoffs? And he doesn't even make the playoffs this year. So I think when you're looking at him getting the new contract, him being looked at as someone who drastically improved his game last year, this year it didn't look like he took a definitive step forward, but he didn't take a definitive step backwards either. He has a lot riding on his reputation as a franchise quarterback and a franchise quarterback in Buffalo, Brew.
All right. I would argue with Nick's contention that by far Buffalo has more riding on this game than anybody else, or more pressure. How about Dallas against San Francisco? I mean, San Fran is a wild card, and the Cowboys are expecting. We know what Jerry Jones is expecting. So I think they're facing pressure. And we talked earlier about the Rams and the Cardinals. If the Rams lose to the Cardinals, I think they're going to get crushed just as much as if Buffalo loses this game. So, look, I get that we want to come on here and act like, oh, the sky is falling, and we talk about every game in life or death terms, right? It would be disappointing, Nick, if Josh Allen and the Bills lose to Matt Jones and the Patriots. There's no – not a disaster. You're losing. You have to understand, you would be losing to the greatest coach of all time. It wouldn't just be a rookie quarterback. It would be, but Bill Belichick was leading the way. I'm not saying it wouldn't be ugly. I'm not saying they wouldn't be criticized. And it would be bad. They had Super Bowl aspirations. Josh Allen was supposed to be an MVP. Didn't even make the Pro Bowl. I get all that. But I'm just saying, when we really step back and look at it, we'd have to say, you know what? He's 25 years old. He's in his fourth season. All right? He can learn from this. It's not always neat. It's not always a stairwell. Well, win 9 games, then get to the playoffs, then lose but get further in the playoffs, then get to the Super Bowl and win it. No, it doesn't always go that way. They might have to take a quick step back. And then Josh, who was down in touchdowns, down in completion percentage, up in interceptions, down in yards, down in passer ratings, maybe he'd step back and look at, why was I subpar this year compared to a year ago? So it could be a good thing. So, yeah, it'd be bad, Nick, in the moment, but not total disaster like you were saying.
I don't think it'd be a total disaster. But when you talk about steps getting better and better and better, that's how the Patriots are going to go. This is a window of opportunity here, Nick, for the Bills to take advantage of a rookie quarterback in a team that just was put together this offseason. They're
That's correct.
And even if you don't, you're not the biggest Mac Jones guy in the world, but you saw Joe Burrow, who was good his rookie year, get a lot better. Saw Jalen Hurts, good his rookie year, get a lot better. Imagine how good the baby goat is going to get. We're going to upgrade him next season to the infant goat. He's going to get better. He's going to have fewer mistakes, going to air it out more. Here's the other thing. Bill Belichick has been very good with people poaching the Belichick coaching tree. Lose an assistant, lose a coordinator, lose people, and Belichick is able to keep it rolling. There's been a lot of talk. Hey, maybe Leslie Frazier gets a new job. Maybe Brian Daboll gets a new job.
Oh,
I don't know if McDermott has a track record of being able to refill the human resources change.
So it's
I think between the rookie quarterback, Patriots having a new squad, and this is a chance to have this coaching staff that seems excellent. Seems like you got three head coaches on that squad that might break up. This is your opportunity to win.
It's a great point. And I think the question that I think it would beg if they lose to this Patriots team is if not now, when? Meaning like if we're not going to beat the Patriots this year when the game's in Buffalo, Mac Jones is a rookie playing the worst ball of the year, all of these things where it should line up for us, then when are we going to beat them? Here's the last point I'll make. This was not the most likely of first round matchups. Once Cincinnati made it clear they were going to tank and we knew Buffalo was going to beat the Jets, a lot of things had to happen for us to get this matchup. The Patriots needed to lose when they were touchdown favorites, but even after they lost, they would have been playing the Chargers if the Chargers had beaten the Raiders. It's just because of tiebreakers that it fell exactly like this. I believe, Jenna, that if we were getting an honest moment from Sean McDermott, he would have said, Give me the anybody else. Give me any of our possible opponents except for this one. Because that not because they don't think they can beat the Patriots, but the cost of losing to the Patriots in the playoffs versus losing to the Chargers versus losing to the Colts if they hadn't choked it away is so much different. I just think there's a lot of nerves in Buffalo, and the Patriots in a weird way are kind of playing with house money this weekend.
Oh, two Patriots fans on the staff right now.
That segment went to Broussard with the whole Steph Ladder thing. I liked it very much.
Oh, Broussard.
Yes, congratulations.
Jenna gives you the win, Broussard.
We've got more.
Really,
We've got more.
What am I like, 3-0?
Yeah.
3-0, I'm rolling.
I don't know about that. First things first, let's talk some Kyrie Irving. Back about a week now, but last night only his second game played. Nets and Blazers before the game. Portland head coach Chauncey Billups took the time to say this, said, quote, "I think Kyrie's the most skilled player that has ever played point guard. High praise from the NBA champ." Here was Kyrie's reaction to hearing those comments.
"I'm grateful for that. You know, coming from him, championship winner, championship point guard. And it gives me more motivation to continue to write this legacy. I definitely agree that my skill level at this point in my career deserves that recognition, you know, but the work never stops."
Broussard, our wise elder statesman, is Chauncey right about Kyrie?
I'm shocked by Chauncey's statement. Now, Kyrie is an awesome player. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I know I might be in the minority on this show in that regard. And he is the greatest ball handler in NBA history and arguably the greatest finisher among point guards. Like, he's one of the best finishers. But is that all that Chauncey's looking at? Because if I want to point out the three major skills for a point guard, I would say shooting, passing, ball handling. And so I got a few. He's obviously not the best shooter. That's Steph. I could argue Steve Nash was a better shooter than Kyrie. Now, he didn't shoot as much as Kyrie, but his field goal, he was 43% from three. Just didn't shoot it a lot. So he's not the best shooter of all time. I said he's the best ball handler. Best passer? Kyrie averages 5.7 assists for his career. All right, there. I can't even go through all the names of point guards who are better passers than Kyrie. And it's not just based on assists, but Kyrie is not that point guard that has that incredible vision, that Magic Johnson, Steve Nash guy like that. He's not even the best passer on his team right now. That's James Harden. So I would here, I'm going to give you two guys who overall, skill wise, I would put ahead of Kyrie, and he's can be up there in the discussion, but Isaiah Thomas, ball handling, I give Kyrie a slight edge, but they're allowed to carry now. You didn't do that when Isaiah Thomas played.
Oh,
he was a great ball
handler
and a great finisher. Isaiah, everybody talks about Kyrie's finishing and he's phenomenal, but Isaiah Thomas was shorter than Kyrie
team.
And had carried a team and had to finish back when there would be 6 to 8 other guys in the paint. No lie. Your players, the opponents, and you had to find a way to finish. Oh, and by the way, you might get hammered. All right, you could get him, your teammates. Yeah. You could get hammered back in the day. He still
was a great finisher
at the rim. The other guy is Steph, because Steph is clearly a better shooter.
Of course.
He's a better passer. He averages 6.5 assists. And then ball handling, again, Kyrie has the edge, but Steph is arguably a top 5 ball handler in NBA history as well. So I would say those two definitely, Nick, belong ahead of Kyrie.
Now, Wild, you go, because I want to let this all, because I agree with most of what Broussard said. I want to hear what you say, Wilds, because this conversation
irritates. So Broussard said something very interesting last week when we were talking about Kyrie coming back to the Nets. And I said, you know what? I think Kyrie really missed the game, showed that he really loved the game when there was a narrative out there that Kyrie didn't love the game and could just walk away and not care. And that was proven wrong. And Broussard, you said something very interesting. You said, yeah, when you look at Kyrie and his game, you can see that he's honed his game totally unique than anyone else in the NBA. And I thought that was fascinating, because when we look at the other point guards in the league, yeah, we get it. Steph has put in all countless hours in the gym, is a great shooter. We get it. Magic was just the big point guard. It was the dawn of the big point guard. Kyrie is shorter than me, and Kyrie can do things on the basketball court that literally we've never seen before. Yes, Steph's handle is good, Nick, but when Kyrie can do stuff and you watch it in slow motion, like, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that before. You've seen finishes with Kyrie that you've never seen before. And I think Chauncey, who knows point guards better than anyone else in the world, he's up there in the upper echelon of point guard sort of knowledge. Oh, come on. But yes, I will appeal to an NBA champion and coach and point guard.
Okay, so then honest question before I give my answer. Wait a second. If this is how we're grading skill, then honest question. Top 5 all-time skilled point guard, Rafer Alston, otherwise known as Skip to my Lou, right? His handle and layup package is second to none almost. This is an insane conversation. Categorically bonkers. Guys, of course Isaiah and Steph are more skilled. By the way, Wilds just said just a total drive-by on the 4th greatest player ever, Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson was a big point guard. Oh, yeah, a big point guard.
He was the dawn
went to 10
of the big
finals, had the greatest vision ever. And, I mean, what are we talking about?
Magic.
The dawn of showtime.
But Nick,
hold on, wait a second.
Okay.
His skill is great. His skill is great. Do I think Kyrie has worked on his game more than Dame has worked on his? No. They're the same size, by the way. Dame's probably shorter. And I do think Kyrie's a Hall of Famer. You said you might be in the minority. I don't know. First, I don't really care about ballots. Kyrie, if he stopped playing today, is a Hall of Famer. With that said, if this is true, and this is what I want your guys' take on, if he is the most skilled point guard ever, if that's true, then this is also true. He has greatly underachieved. If you're the most skilled point guard ever, and you are not even in the argument for one of the 10 best point guards of the last 40 years, what happened? And you might say 10 guys. Well, just the last 40 years, post-Walt Frazier. Well, there's Magic, there's Steph, there's Isaiah Thomas. There's Chris Paul. There's John Stockton. We're at five. There's Gary Payton. There's Jason Kidd. There's his coach, Steve Nash. There's two guys he plays against, Russ and Damian Lillard. And if you include Allen Iverson as a point guard, even though he's a shooting guard, there's 11. He's made All-NBA first team, never. He's made All-NBA second team once, one of those great Celtics seasons, doff the cap there. And he's made All-NBA third team twice. Dame has made All-NBA first or second team five times. Like, if he's the, what, Broussard, if you're the most skilled point guard ever, and only once in your career at the end of the season has some, have the voters said you were even one of the four best guards in basketball. Only three times at the end of a season have the voters said you were one of the six best guards in basketball. When you have the same number of All-NBA first or second teams as Isaiah Thomas, not the real Isaiah Thomas, the little new IT4 Celtic Isaiah Thomas, what happened? Like, so I just don't think, I think this is a crazy conversation.
Good argument.
No, look, your point about, like, Chauncey clearly meant this as a compliment. And it was a great compliment. And he gushed on about Kyrie. It was insane. But it does end up being an insult, Nick, when you're right, because you say, well, why hasn't Kyrie done more if he is indeed the greatest skilled player to ever play the point guard position? I said the same thing when Steve Kerr came out. Remember when he said Kevin Durant was the most talented player he's ever seen? Then I said, well, that's why has he has underachieved if that's the case. Because he certainly hasn't won the most championships, the most MVP awards, dominated the league like LeBron or MJ. Like, so you got to be careful with these statements. And to wrap it up, I just think Chauncey is looking at ball handling. Ball handling is insane for Kyrie. He is the greatest street ball player in the NBA right now. I will give him that. And one of the prettiest games we've ever seen. But no, he's not the most skilled player to ever play the
position.
Let's
get Wilds. Let's get Chauncey's take on the professor. I want to know. Let's get it.
Well, when we move this game to the street, we'll have this conversation again.
Pacific Northwest.
Does Tom Brady actually deserve the MVP over Aaron Rodgers? Someone on this panel says yes. First things first. Hey, tomorrow night, the Big East going back-to-back on FS1. Look at that, 14th-ranked Villanova taking on 17th-ranked Xavier. Then St. John's facing UConn. Catch the doubleheader action starting tomorrow, 6 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. We are back talking the Buffalo Bills. Stories to start your morning on this Tuesday morning. AFC East winners again this year, so this sets up a third meeting with the Patriots this season, this one in the wild card round. But for Josh Allen, he says Patriots schmatriots. He said it like that, the way I did. His sights are already set on a bigger goal. Take a listen to what he had to say.
Nobody at the end of careers looks back and really figures out how many times you won your division. You know, I think the main goal is the Super Bowl, and winning the division just gives you an opportunity to do that. So that's really our focus. You know, it's great and it's fine. The hats and shirts are cool, but at the end of the day, we got a lot more work to do.
I don't know. I feel like Wilds probably knows how many times the Patriots won their division. Nick, what is on the line for Josh Allen in this game Saturday versus the Patriots?
There's more on the line for the Bills as a franchise and Josh Allen as a player than for any other team or any other individual player in these playoffs this weekend. And it's because of who they're playing, and it's because of their season last year, and it's because of the contract, it's because of everything. If they win, they get Kansas City in round two, and the plan, yeah, they would have liked to be the one seed, they would have liked to have that game against Kansas City and Buffalo, but the plan is basically going the way they had hoped for. Peaking at the end of the year, get the Chiefs, you've been built to beat the Chiefs, beat them, and claim the AFC. So it's all there for the taking. But if they lose to this Patriots team this year again, one has to ask themselves, if not now, when? I think they would have had a tougher matchup with the Chargers, which is who they would have gotten if the Chargers would have beaten the Raiders. But I bet they would have rather played the Chargers. Because if you lose to the Chargers, like, tough weekend, Herbert was great, we missed some passes, we'll get back at them. We're disappointed we move on. But if you lose to this team, the big brother in your division for 20 years, who embarrassed you once this year already, and it's when Wilds, when Mac Jones is a rookie, playing his worst football of the year, when they have all these new pieces, all the question begs itself, if not now, when? Like, a couple weeks ago, Wilds, I didn't tell you guys until after, but I had COVID during the shows. And the reason I didn't say anything was because I was a little brain foggy. I couldn't quite follow the conversations. And I didn't want Broussard to feel the pressure of, if I can't beat Nick in a debate now when his brain's all messed up, when is it going to happen? But, like, that is Wilds. That is what, if you can't beat the Patriots now in Buffalo with a rookie quarterback, then win. So I think they have massive pressure on them this weekend.
I agree. And Broussard, here's the thing. As much as everyone knows that Mac Jones is the baby goat, next year, I am upgrading him to the baby, no, shoot, not the baby infant, the infant goat. I'm sorry. When I talk about greatness, my head gets foggy as well. So I'm upgrading him to the infant goat. So we know that Mac Jones is going to be better. We know that this team that was largely put together with free agents and draft picks is going to be better next year. And look, it took a historically weird game for the Patriots to beat the Bills the first time in Buffalo. But we did win. Mac Jones and the Patriots know they don't need to be scared of this version of the Bills. And here's the other thing about the Bills' window. I think Josh Allen's window is wide open. I think that the offense is going to cook and be fine. But are we sure there's not three head coaches on that roster right now? Leslie Frazier could get a job. Brian Daboll could get a job. Now, Bill Belichick has been able to lose assistants and lose coordinators and just sort of next man up it, just like we do with the roster. But Brandon Staley left the Rams, and the Rams went from the number one defense in points per game down to 15th. Is it because the coordinator left? Maybe. So this is a window not only to beat the Patriots because we're just like a little kid, literally, baby go, and growing, but also you've got a superstar coaching staff there that you might not have even next year.
All right, Wiles, I know why Nick is going here because, you know, Josh Allen, he loves to pounce on Josh Allen. All right, he's a threat to Mahomes, yep. So Nick's going to kill him. All right, put the pressure on him. And I know why you're going here because you're hoping that the Patriots, led by Belichick, can somehow pull this off and you believe in them and all that. All right, but the fact of the matter is, first of all, Nick, I would argue Dallas is facing a lot of pressure to beat San Francisco. That's a wild card you would be losing to. Now, I might pick San Francisco. I haven't decided yet. But that's a wild card. So if you're the Cowboys, you got to win that game. That's pressure. And then I would say Matthew Stafford and the L.A. Rams are under more pressure to win this weekend against Arizona than Buffalo is with New England. Now, outside of that, you made some good points. It will be incredibly disappointing. This was a year they had Super Bowl aspirations. You go out in the first round, wild card, at home, that is bad. All right, no doubt about it. And Josh Allen, MVP candidate in the preseason, didn't even make the Pro Bowl. Okay, so it would be a disappointing season. There's no glossing over that. However, he's 25 years old. He's in his fourth season. Right. He's already won two playoff games. He's already won more playoff games than Lamar Jackson. All right, Peyton Manning started his career 0-3 in the playoffs. So, Josh, this notion that, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling in Buffalo. Blow it up. Blow it up. No. They're coming back next year, and they'll be – I think Josh, if they lose, would view this as a learning experience and look in the mirror and say, I was down in touchdowns. I was down in completion percentage. I was down in yards. I was down in passer rating, and I was up in interceptions. Why was I subpar this year? And he would come back better for it next year. So, look, I'm not predicting they're going to lose. I'm not saying it's not that bad if they lose. It is disappointing. But no, it's not the worst thing in the world for the Bills or Allen, Nick, if they fall.
I think that would have been the case if they would have fallen. Again, let's just assume they lose wild card weekend. I think that's true if it's to any team other than the Patriots. I think the Patriots, it's a psychological thing, and the team you play twice a year and has owned you for so long. I just think there's a matchup they didn't want. To answer, though, or to respond to this idea that I'm anti-Josh Allen because he's a rival of Mahomes, Josh Allen is a rival of Space Mountain, not of the greatest quarterback in football. Can we show our updated Magic Mountain Allen graphic, please? We had to, he broke the graphic against Atlanta. Oh my God, you gotta be over 14 years old and 5'6" to get on this ride now. We went to the depths, we went off the chart. So yeah, I do think Wilds, that actually bodes somewhat dangerous for your Patriots because he's due to have another high peak. I just don't think they wanted this matchup. I think they wanted, you went so far down, he should go back up. I don't know. It's hard to follow. All I know is goes up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Wilds. Like, I think they would have rather played a better team than the Patriots because of the psychological.
I know we're up against the break, Jenna, but I think I need to make him apologize because I thought the Titans had a bye. And I guess the Chiefs also had a bye. Is that true? Because you're saying the winner of this game is going to play Kansas City. I am sorry.
No,
I thought this was
Buffalo.
The year we only had
the
one bye.
The Patriots would go to the Titans. Confused about two things with how the bracket works. One is the reseeding. The other is Big Ben in the playoffs is a bye. It actually is a bye.
I did get it wrong.
So,
I actually was making a joke.
You got that wrong. Yeah.
Darn it.
Oh, we had a great show. This was fun. We got to go. Undisputed starts right now. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.
Hey, college football fans. Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.